I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, you are listening to the Manchester City Football Social. Thank you so much for downloading and listening to this podcast. If you're not subscribing already, what are you doing? You're going to miss a show. Hit subscribe. If you enjoy what you're listening to, which I'm sure you do, why don't you give us a nice rating? We've got a brilliant show coming up for you. Hope you enjoy it.
Manchester City Football Social with Blue Moon Rising.
Good evening and welcome to the Manchester City Football Social. Thank you so much for listening. My name is Natalie Pike and I am joined in the studio this evening by Sam Lee and Walter Smith. Good evening, gents.
Hello.
How you doing?
Very, very good. Even better after last night's Liverpool result, but we'll get onto that in a minute because there is so much to cover tonight. We're going to have a little look to see if some City players are perhaps being scapegoated by some of our fans. And we're also going to be taking loads of your questions from Twitter. So there's still time for you to get involved if you would like to ask any of us a question here this evening, or indeed if you would like to come on and speak to us. So you can do that. You can tweet us at MCR Footy Social. You can ring us 0345 111 7625, or you can text us 87711. But let's get straight into it. Let's have a little talk back about that incredible victory against Arsenal on Sunday and that incredible draw for West Ham last night. How are you feeling, Walter?
The title race looked like it was doom and gloom, but there's a sunrise certainly over Manchester. It's tipped the scales in many respects, and I believe if we win at Everton, we're top of the league. I think there's a song about that, Raheem Sterling.
Can you believe it? Like, how were you feeling last Tuesday after that result up in Newcastle?
Oh, it was a kick in the teeth, wasn't it? It was one of those games where you feel very confident about winning. And you know you've got all the better players. And you're 1-0 up after, you know, a blink of an eye. And oh, the footballing gods weren't shining on us. So, yeah, I was absolutely gutted. I thought, you know, it was all in the press there where it may have got away from us, but it wasn't to be.
Well, the thing that night was, you know, City might have a couple of problems here and there with different things, but, you know, they're going to win most of their games from now until the end of the season. But the thing was, the biggest problem for City last week was Liverpool just didn't look like they were going to slip up at any point. And since then, you know, the last 6 days, they've slipped up twice. So it's just, it's all to play for again. And it's, you know, I said when City lost last week, there's a long time to go. And I wasn't just saying that to appease City fans. You know, there is a long time to go. So I wouldn't get too carried away yet. But the fact that Liverpool have started to have this wobble now, it does bode well for City's chances of winning the league.
I have to admit, I'm super optimistic. And even at like 91:30 on the famous day, I was still going, we can do this. Last Tuesday night, I had an absolute hissy fit and said, that's it, it's over. We're never going to win the league now. I went to bed in an absolutely foul mood. And then obviously the next night, everything changed. And then I was like eating me words. I was like, oh yeah, never mind.
That's the best thing about it, isn't it? And that's the great thing about football, but it also, I mean, it just goes to show kind of, as fans, you can completely understand that reaction. And it was a bad game. You know, I think Guardiola went to bed in as bad a mood as you did, you know, for what it's worth. But it just goes to show how quickly it can change. But it just goes to show that, you know, these are two really good teams.
Yeah.
But they can have slip-ups, and it's just, it's how you deal with that. But I mean, we might talk about Liverpool's squad in a bit, but City have got the best squad, and everyone's kind of fit at the minute. Mendy apparently is is fit again to at least travel tomorrow. I mean, I don't think he's going to start, but he's coming back. That'll be a big thing. So, I mean, it does look like it has swung back in City's direction. But like we say, this is football and mad things do happen. And once you get the Champions League back into the mix.
Yeah.
And I mean, normally, I guess you'd want Liverpool to lose to Bayern just for the laugh, because that's how football is. But basically, the longer they stay in it, the better it is for City.
And obviously they're not in the FA Cup as well, and we're still playing in that. We've got the League Cup final as well, so we've got this extra game tomorrow. I've said before on this show, I am not one of these, like, want British teams to do well in the Champions League.
No.
I want everybody to fail except us, and fail as miserably as they possibly can. And I think the more Liverpool lose, although I know what you're saying in terms of, like, the more they play, like,
just distractions the squad depth.
I want them to lose because I want them to get into this mentality of losing.
Yeah, it would be good for the lols, as they say.
Yeah.
It is the thing with a lot of football fans, I find, it's all black or white. You know, there's no middle ground. And it's just, you know, thank God that the club isn't run like that. You know, they've got long-term and short-term and medium-term plans. But as a football fan, that game means everything. And if you lose, you know, it's the worst day. And if you win, it's the best day. But that, as a fan, you've got that privilege. But as a club, we're far better structured than that.
And obviously last night's game again that Liverpool drew, there was a particular person that played in that game that was really catching a lot of City fans' eyes, and that is Declan Rice.
Yeah.
I don't know a huge amount about him, but you as an Irish man, Walter, you certainly know a bit about him.
Yeah. As much as my accent sounds Mancunian, I was born in Dublin, so I do support the Republic of Ireland. And he was the best player at under 17. He was the best player at under 19 there. And they're absolutely praying for him to sign up, because he's played 3 friendly games for Ireland, which I watched, and he was superb. And what I love about him is, if you look at when he receives the ball, like, you know, Silva looks both ways. He does exactly the same. He's got a sort of 360 vision of the pitch whenever he gets that ball. He's not going to get someone coming in from the side of him. So I'd love to see, I was saying last summer they should have bought him, but I'd love to see Declan Rice under Pep Guardiola and his tutelage. You know, what could he do for him? He'd just improve him as a player. You know, he's got Manuel Pellegrini, but we've seen the difference between Manchester City players under Pellegrini and under Pep Guardiola. And every single one of them I can think of, probably besides Yaya, has improved immensely. So Declan Rice, I think, would be a fantastic understudy to Fernandinho.
Yeah, I think Guardiola likes him as well. I think the biggest sign of that was after the game in November, I think it was. And just in the press conference afterwards, he was doing his usual appraisal of the game and how it went. And he made like a special mention of Declan Rice. But I think he did his usual England, you should be proud, you've got a really good player kind of thing. He obviously didn't quite know the politics about him, which I'm sure he does now if they're looking at
disagree.
It. Well, yeah, exactly. But yeah, so I think Guardiola's a fan as well. I mean, I don't know if he'd be top of the list at the minute, especially because, you know, they need a really perfect player, basically, to replace Fernandinho. But if there's room to bring him in as well, I mean, West Ham, they don't seem that competent a club in terms of, you know, their business decisions. I don't see them holding City to ransom. You know, they won't want to let him go easily, and they might want a bit of a...
They've tied him down to a long-term contract, and they've been bigging him up. I mean, he was a Chelsea youngster, and he came to West Ham, and he's been their best player at youth level as well. So we are talking about a talent, but...
Well, they won't want to let him go, but I just don't see them going 100 million.
Well, we've actually got someone on the line that wants to talk about it, and that is Lewis. And Lewis said, could Declan Rice be the mythical creature known as the Fernandinho replacement? Hiya, Lewis.
Hiya, you all right?
Yeah, are you?
Yeah, very good, thank you.
Right, what do you think about Declan Rice?
Well, I didn't realise how good he was on the ball until I watched him last night, and Walter was just saying about his 360 vision. I've watched him a few times this season, but the thing that stood out for me is his tackling and his awareness off the ball. But I didn't quite realise how good he was on the ball last night. And he had a calm head. He was passing his way through the Liverpool defence. And I think the thing that stood out for me is that Fernandinho, who we praise like as high as possible, Fernandinho's been phased by Liverpool in the last 18 months. He's been, you know, he's been pressed off the ball. But Declan Rice had like a calm head. He was pressing through. He was press resistant almost on the ball, always looking to pass forward, and I thought, well, yeah, he could be that man to replace Fernandinho. We'll have to see how it goes.
Would you want him to be If the choice was down to you, because I'm sure you would have seen Guardiola's comments the other week saying they've got four or five players in mind for the kind of player that can come in and replace Fernandinho. If it were up to you, who would you pick? If, say, some of the other names on there were Ndombele, Aouar, Neves, those kind of names, for example, who would you go for?
Well, I think, obviously, Frankie de Jong's gone, so then I think maybe Ndombele is probably top of the list, but I don't know whether I've seen enough of him play to say that. I'd say Rice is probably ahead of Ruben Neves for me. I think, obviously, Neves has got a great shot on him and he's got a great passing range, but I think we don't need someone that's going to score goals, we just need someone that's going to shield the defence and can pass forward. So maybe Ndombele, but I think Rice would settle in maybe a bit easier because he obviously knows the league a bit better.
Well, I know Declan Rice is certainly homegrown. I sent a tweet out last night, and about 10 seconds later, he had that header. So it didn't. The tweet didn't age well, as it were. But do you see anything else in Declan Rice's game that he could bring to Manchester City?
Well, he's only 20. He's only just turned 20 in the last few weeks. And I was thinking, well, if we sign him in the summer, that's at least 10 years out of him. So whatever fee we did play, I think he could do that. But also, I look at him as sort of a leader as well. I watched him last night in the midfield with Mark Noble, and he was sort of giving out instructions to Mark Noble, who's probably 10 years older than him and played for West Ham for 10 years. So that's something as well. But when you think about company, maybe...
Oh, we lost you. We lost Lewis. But yeah, he was making some absolutely great points there, certainly about his age as well, just being 20.
And the maturity is a bit like Eric Garcia, who's in the City Academy at the moment. That's obviously a big thing. And obviously it's a big thing for football managers in general, but you could imagine if Guardiola were to bring in somebody who's 20 years old and he comes in first day on the training pitch, starts telling his older teammates what to do, then yeah, he could settle in very well. And I mean, it's no surprise really that he has got admirers like this, but now United have got a proper manager again. I think United are sniffing around him as well, and it might go back to the days when...
You're calling him a proper manager now?
Well, I am. Well, yeah, certainly compared to the last one. But it might go back to the days now where City and United are going for the same players, whereas recently that's not happened because Mourinho's not really been interested in anyone who can play football. But now they're going to be. If you look at like Wan-Bissaka at Palace and Chilwell at left-back, you know, United need full-backs more so than City. They're going to be looking as well. But Rice is definitely one that... City will have to do their old tactics, basically, of getting into his agent and saying, this is how much you'll earn. If you want to come and play for Guardiola, then you tell West Ham, you tell Golden Sullivan, and we'll sort out a deal with them. That'll be how they do it, because I think a lot of people are going to want him.
But if you want to improve if you're a young player and you want to improve, and certainly Declan Rice, and you think to yourself, which manager am I going to learn the most from? Which one am I going to get up highest up the echelons of football at? Manchester City's got everything there built for young players to come in, and he's got a whole raft of players around him, you know, very young players as well. And you mentioned Eric Garcia, and we talk about City and the leaders sometimes, not on the pitch, but if you've got him, Garcia, coming through, you know, that problem seems to solve itself.
But is he going to play, though? As a 20-year-old, if you're playing every week in the West Ham team, are you going to come to City and play enough? Or are you happy to come and not play as much to be at City under Pep?
But City play miles more games, don't they? They get further in the Champions League, further in the FA Cup, the Carabao Cup. So the amount of games you would get on a percentage term would be far lower. But in an actual term of minutes on the pitch, I can't see there being that much difference.
Yeah, it's such a big thing for Fernandinho, isn't it? That how many minutes he plays, and he'll be another year old, he'll be getting on for what, 34, 35? which, you know, it doesn't seem old in world terms, but for a footballer and keeping up with people who are 10 years younger than you or more, that's a big thing. But he certainly didn't have any issues with that on Sunday, did he, with that new role and Guardiola's tactics before the game.
So fascinating that, wasn't it? Were you like it? I think when the team got read out in City Square, everybody just started looking at each other and we started talking and we came up with about five or six possible different formations. And I think the only one we didn't talk about was the one that...
Yeah, I certainly didn't expect him to be at centre-back going into midfield. I suppose we should have, really, if we'd looked at what Guardiola's done before at Bayern and even to a lesser extent at Barca, but it was great how he had the guts to do it and how it actually worked as well. You know, for Fernandinho to be able to do that, but for Guardiola to spot that and trust him to do it in a game like this, you know, after a defeat against Newcastle, wasn't a gimme, was it? And at Arsenal, we've all got our own thoughts about that. But it was just so impressive, and it just goes to show that really, more than anything else, that there's so much more to City than just, you know, we talk about the 4-3-3, but it's never really that. You know,
no,
people
not.
Going into midfield and people spreading out and doing different things. But that was the clearest sign yet that there's so much that depends on where City are on the pitch, who's got the ball, and Fernandinho kind of embodied that more than anybody at the weekend.
Well, I mean, I think you put out a video there, and it was interesting because it drew the lines for you, just in case you couldn't figure it out yourself. But
there's a lot of people, including myself, who, as many lines as possible, basically.
Ooh,
it's not including that. it's on my Twitter. Yeah, I think some lads from Argentina run like a kind of football tactics account.
Yeah.
They sent me a message the other day saying, if you ever want to do any videos for City, just get in touch and let us know. So after the Arsenal game, I went, oh, the Fernandinho defence into midfield thing was kind of interesting. Let's do that. So, yeah, they put some arrows on the,
on
the pitch.
He's
and showed us how it works. So.
You know, when you look at certain players and you can see that they don't possess that footballing intelligence. I mean, you've got Fernandinho there and he's brought the ball forward. I mean, he only lost the ball against Newcastle because I think he was put in such a bad situation.
I don't think he expected to have two men closing him down either.
There's no fault there.
He turned past one and there was someone else there.
I think we'll all forgive him as well for all the good that he's done.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, he's forgiven.
What do you think? This seems ridiculous. Like, anybody want to do any like wild guess on what we'll play tomorrow when we play Everton?
Well, last year we went there and he kind of started the Laporte left back thing.
Yeah.
And he was like left back, left centre back, left winger. But that was kind of because they had Anfield in the Champions League coming up, and I think he was kind of just trailing that. So I wouldn't be surprised if he just went back to, in inverted commas, the 4-3-3 tomorrow, maybe with Laporte at left back because it worked right at the weekend. He can get another, well, basically a bit more reliable, isn't he, than Danilo and Delph and Zinchenko. And I don't think Mendy's ready yet. So I wouldn't be surprised if he went back to that, but bringing Sané and people like that and shouldn't be too much of a problem, really.
Yeah, I can't wait for tomorrow night because everything crossed for a win and we can start gloating about the fact that we're back on top of the league again, at least, you know, for 3 or 4 days. There's so much to talk about. We barely even got to talk about that Everton game there because there's just so much going on with City at the minute. We're going to just take a little break. We'll be back in a minute. There's still time for you to get involved if you want to tweet us at MCR Footy Social. Ring us 0345 111 7625 or text us 87711. And when we come back, we're going to have a little look at three players in particular that we feel are getting a bit scapegoated by some City fans.
Manchester City Football Social.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Manchester City Football Social with Blue Moon Rising.
Welcome back to the Manchester City Football Social on XS Manchester. I'm Sam Lee and tonight I'm joined by Natalie Pike and Walter Smith. If you want to get in touch with us, you can call us on 0345 111 7625, text on 87711 or tweet us on at MCR Footy Social. We've got loads to get through now, including Premier League managers' excuses. Looking at you, Jürgen. We've got whether Pep Guardiola sometimes overthinks his tactics. And later on, we've even got a Sunday high quiz, if you can imagine that. But for now, we've got the potentially explosive issue of City scapegoats. So, guys, do you think there are certain players that always seem to get stick when City don't play well?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely. I think we've got differing opinions in the studio on who we think that is and how we feel about them. But for me, I think the person at the minute that's getting the most stick for I'll just say it and then you can know what I'm saying. It's Danilo. I'm going to stick up for Danilo. And I do think he's been getting a bit of unjustified stick. He's up for the January Player of the Month, which I think shows you how much the club thinks of him. He's been thrown into having to play right back, left back, being switched around. He got a goal against Huddersfield. I just don't think he deserves the stick that he's getting. And I feel like he has become a scapegoat for a lot of people.
Yeah, well, this kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier about how kind of reactive everything is and how over the top everything is, because like for a while, Kyle Walker's another one we might even but people were saying, well, when Mendy's fit, Danilo will play right back because Walker's not been playing well. And that was the kind of how well he was regarded. And then he had a bad game at Newcastle last week and everyone was just talking as if none of that stuff before it happened. And he was just terrible. And so he's definitely on the list now, Danilo.
On the scapegoat list.
Yeah. But like you say, he's normally a right back. He's done all right. I mean, there's not been too many opportunities for him to play right back this season because of injuries and because of injuries to others. And last season didn't play there an awful lot. So he's kind of doing his best at left back. If you have a bad game at Newcastle, he certainly wasn't the only one. And that's the whole idea of a scapegoat, really, isn't it? But unfortunately, if he's not in the team, then the City fans, well, not all, obviously not all of them, but a certain element, I suppose, Twitter mainly, can find someone to pick at.
Oh, Twitter will find anything to pick at any time, any place, anywhere.
True.
I know, we've got a bit of a history with this. I remember Richard Edgehill getting dogs abuse at Main Road. But especially with Danilo, I mean, this is a guy who's played on the left side and the right side. But when he's playing left side, everything about him, you know, just thinks right because that's the position he's always sort of grown up in. That's what's natural to him. So he's going on to the other side of the pitch and just automatically when you sort of cut in,
It slows things down, doesn't it?
It slows things down because, number one, you're having to think about things, but the space in front of you is different as well. So I wouldn't be too hard on Danilo. I know one for me that seems to be getting a lot of abuse is Kyle Walker.
Yeah.
You know, and this is a guy who had 5 days holiday. He wanted to come back early and prove himself. Now, whether that's been his undoing, because he had a couple of terrible games over Christmas. So he was in for sort of dogs abuse. I remember seeing him get outpaced a few times, which I'd never seen before, because he was just like, you know, Bugs Bunny type character. You know, he was just faster than anything. And you just seen him, he used his pace to get out of trouble. So to see him getting outpaced this year, it's been something completely unusual.
So when he had a big part to play for City last year, played a lot of games, played in a different position for England in the summer, in what was, you know, a stressful summer for the England players and ultimately disappointing as well. The way they went out, came back, as you said, not much break, and again due to injuries, he's not been able to be taken out of the team. Really, he's come in and played in different positions at sometimes, as we saw on Sunday. But yeah, I mean, he has been out of form for the last couple of months, and you know there can be perfectly understandable reasons for that. But again, it's when it comes to like the scapegoating, it's those kind of completely understandable reasons, they go out the window, and it's just straight to, he's useless, he needs to get out of the team, etc., etc. And it's just not helpful, I suppose, is the word I'm looking for.
But do you know what? When you are going through a tough patch, what you shouldn't be doing is putting, you know, questionable tweets out there. Now, I listened to this show a couple of days ago when Adam Keyworth was talking about, and he obviously works in social media as his full-time job, and he was saying that he thinks that Kyle Walker will have a company that does his Twitter account. But still, that, I don't know, if you didn't see it, he put a tweet out after the Liverpool drew last week, and it was like a meme, you know, and they thought they would go 7 points with Harry Maguire, and I just second I saw it, I just cringe. I just thought, mate, keep your head down, like, just try and work hard, get back into the team. You don't need this like Twitter attention.
It didn't take a genius to work out that it was going to be deleted after a few hours. The thing is, if you're there, you know, if you're on top of the world, it's a lot easier to look down. But when you're in bad form, or some City fans perceive you to be in some respects, letting the side down, and then you're tweeting about another team who are way above you, or they were at the time. You know, it's fool's gold, isn't it?
Well, that's just how it is now, like with Twitter and that kind of thing. And again, I don't know, do we focus too much on Twitter? But sticking with scapegoats, does it matter really? But I suppose it kind of does in shaping opinions and that kind of thing.
I've always said I only ever want my club to be on the back pages. I don't want my club to ever be in the front of a newspaper or to being talked about for non-football things.
Yeah,
trending for non-footballing reasons.
Yeah, but then that's the other side of it, especially with Morris. So, like, Gundogan is a player who has been scapegoated in the past when he's stepped in for David Silva and Kevin De Bruyne. And that statement should tell you all you need to know. He's stepping in for two of the best players in the Premier League and in Europe.
Yeah.
And he might not be at their level, but that's not a crime, is it? Well, they're two great players.
Having a go at him for not being Kevin De Bruyne and David Silva.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So, I mean, I suppose that kind of covers that one quickly. But the biggest one is Mahrez.
Yeah.
I think at the moment, but that's kind of gone out a little bit because he's just not played in the Premier League. You know, he came on for 2 minutes the other day, and that was his first appearance since the Southampton game at the end of December, which seems like forever ago. Obviously, he played in the FA Cup twice, in the League Cup twice, which kind of might show you that not everything is right there, because he's not playing in the Premier League, he is playing in the Cups. But he was getting kind of this scapegoating thing beforehand because it looked, to be in fairness, at first he didn't look like it, and then it looked like he'd settled in a bit, but then December time, it looked like he wasn't quite on the same wavelength as the rest. But again, he's a new player, he's just signed, he was the only player who signed. All these players got 100 points last year, playing exactly how they need to do. They know exactly what they need to do. Mahrez comes in, he needs to learn that, and he's only been doing it for less than 6 months.
Right, let's get someone else's opinion on this. We've got Tim, who is on the phone. And Tim is all the way from New York, and Tim does a podcast called the Citizens Abroad podcast. Hiya, Tim.
Hey, everyone. How you doing?
Hello, mate.
How are you?
Tim, what do you think about the scapegoating subject that we were just talking about, and specifically looking at, like, Mahrez, Gundogan, Danilo? What do you think?
Yeah, I think all those guys have gotten scapegoated at one point or another. You know, on my podcast, I've been accused of scapegoating from time to time. And early on in the season, I had some problems with Gundogan. And, you know, like you said, part of it is that he wasn't KDB, that he wasn't David Silva. And so in the last few months, though, he's really stepped up. He's kind of figured out a way not to be those guys, but to be Gundogan and kind of play a role that fits, you know, his athleticism better. He's been healthy for the first time in a long time, fully at City. So I've had to back that up on Twitter quite a few times and apologize to Gundogan. So I'll do one more time on the airwaves as well.
Well, criticism's fine of a player, isn't it? If it's, you know, kind of measured and understanding, I suppose. And obviously, as fans, everyone loses their temper. That's understandable. But running a podcast, especially over in the States, how do you find the fan culture and the following of City, and especially with the last couple of years having the pre-season over there? How is the City brand kind of going on that side of the pond?
It's going well. The fan culture is good and growing. There is City supporters clubs all over the country. You see them being more of a presence on social media. There's a great one where I get to attend a few games a year down in New York City in the West Village. They're called the New York Sky Blues. They meet at Amity Hall, and it is a really, really excellent environment to watch. To watch a game in. And then, you know, as far as having preseason, it's been amazing. I actually attended the Liverpool City match at MetLife Stadium, where the Giants and Jets play, the American football teams. And to be able to watch it live was awesome. I will say it was probably 60-40 Liverpool fans. The supporters
are still decent,
a little
it?
More.
Yeah,
it's not bad at all. And you know, with City's success, obviously the fan base is just going to grow and grow. And so I find that there's a lot of, you know, a lot of growth and a lot of positive feedback for a podcast being done over here in the States.
Oh, brilliant. And we obviously have Sister Club over in New York. Is that made any connection to you, the New York City? Do you care? Do the Americans know the sort of the connection between the clubs?
I think they do. I think it's very popular in New York. You know, the sport of football and, you know, soccer, as we call it here in the States, has been around on a professional level for a long time, and so it's growing and growing. The New York, New Jersey Red Bulls have been, I think, in the MLS from their inauguration. And so when NYCFC came in a few years ago, they started to develop a foothold. They obviously play at Yankee Stadium, which is one of the iconic venues in the United States. And so they've been growing, and, you know, because of the color colors, because of the kits, because of a lot of the connections that are slowly being made from City Football Group, I think that people are really starting to kind of notice the connection. And as both clubs start to have a lot of success, it is going to turn supporters of NYCFC into City fans, and I think vice versa.
Can I ask, I know you had the Super Bowl the other night, and me personally, I can't even spell NFL. So I'm looking at, do you know the popularity of soccer, as you call it there? Can you ever see it superseding one of the big American sports?
Yeah, I can. I mean, I think really at this point, the Premier League specifically, and, you know, European football in general is growing in a lot of ways. Obviously, a lot of Real Madrid, Barcelona fans in the States, things like that. But the Premier League specifically, with its now, it's the availability on television is growing and growing. I think it's going to be getting close with the NHL, the National Hockey League, pretty soon. And honestly, you know, I've always said to people, within my lifetime at some point, whether it's 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, the things that are going on with health and safety in the NFL, head injuries and the toll it takes on your bodies, I really do think that NFL is going to slowly kind of go the way of boxing and things like that, and kind of lose their workforce before they lose their popularity. And I see a real opportunity for the Premier League especially to grow and fill some of that vacuum.
Oh, brilliant. Well, thank you so much, Tim. I appreciate that you've given us a bell all the way over from New York. If anybody is anywhere around the world and they want to get your podcast, how do they do that?
Yeah, you can check it out on anywhere you get your podcasts, on SoundCloud, iTunes, Google Play, Podbean, Player FM, all those places. And then check me out on Twitter. It's at Citizen Podcast, CITYZEN Podcast.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Tim. Ah, there we go. Callers from all around the world. Amazing. From over in New York. Really interesting stuff from him as well. Right, loads more to talk about, so we better crack on, because this list of things that have been going on in the city world is just huge this week. When we came into the office before, Sam, you were talking about an article that you'd read about Pep overthinking. Do you want to tell us a bit about that?
Well, it's a theme that always comes up. And I'm not sure if it's one of these things that kind of follows Guardiola around, because another one is arrogance. So when City lost to Palace over Christmas, it was Guardiola arrogant because he didn't play, who was it? Aguero, and he didn't play De Bruyne, and De Bruyne didn't even start the next game. So that kind of shows you how he just wasn't fit. And I think Aguero, he wasn't fit either. But instead of looking at actual reasons why people might not play, it never seems to be far from people's mind to go, oh, is Guardiola being arrogant? And I think the same side of that coin is overthinking things, because there is a bit of a pattern, in fairness, there is a bit of a pattern in big games where he tries something completely different. And there's books on it about his time at Bayern Munich, Barcelona as well. But in that evolution as a coach, definitely now at City. So the Liverpool games last year, the Arsenal final in the Carabao Cup, earlier last year, he kind of went with all his midfielders, basically similar to what he did on Sunday. And again on Sunday, he tried something completely new. And now it's just the idea that, oh, is he thinking too hard? But what I'm thinking is, this is a difficult game. And are we criticising somebody for coming up with tactics to do that? And I mean, people were making the case that, look, Stefan Lichtsteiner was playing right back for Arsenal. Could he not just have played Sané there? I don't know. I mean, that does sound very simple, but football obviously isn't that simple. And surely if Guardiola thought that would have been the best way to go about it, he would have done that. But even if not, for what he did choose, it caused three goals from the left-hand side. They all came from down the left-hand side, down Lichtsteiner's side. So he exploited that weakness anyway. I'm just not sure about this whole overthinking thing. It just seems a bit of an easy thing to say about a manager who's just got, frankly, loads of ideas. He could do a podcast on his own for about 6 hours.
I would definitely listen to that, by the way. The Pep podcast. Let's get on to City for that. So we're just going to go into another quick break now. When we come back, though, we're going to be answering your questions from Twitter. You still do have a chance to get any of those questions into us. You want to ask anybody here anything generally to do with City, probably the best idea. It's MCR Footy Social. And obviously, you know that I work at City Square as well. So we just want to let you know that on Saturday, there is a double header at City. It's a really exciting weekend. You've got Nick Cushing's women's team playing Chelsea at 1 p.m. at the Academy. Academy Stadium. And then at 4 p.m, of course, we are also playing Chelsea as well. It's the first time ever that the men and the women have faced the same club opposition on the same day. And if you're going to the men's game, you can get into the women's game for just £2. We'll be back in a minute.
Manchester City Football Social.
Manchester City Football Social with Blue Moon Rising.
We're back on the Manchester City Football Social on XS Manchester. If you want to ring in, it's 0345 111 7625. Give us a text on 87711 or even a tweet at MCR Footy Social. So we're going to go lead in with a straightaway with a call with Pat wanting to talk FFP.
Hello, hey there, Patrick.
Yeah, hello, yeah, I can hear you.
Hello, what do you want to talk about?
No, I actually had just like two questions to ask.
Right.
Who's there on the show today, by the way?
It's me, Natalie.
Hello, mate, it's Sam Lee from Goal.
And Walter Smith.
Oh, how you doing, Walter and Sam?
Very well.
We're good, thanks, mate.
Yeah, I'm actually a hardcore fan, so I'm very excited. Anyway, I wanted to ask something, a question for Sam, actually, because he seems to know most of the deep stuff in. What do you think is the reason behind all this bidding war where we're losing? I know you once said that we've got a sort of a policy where we have to look for a player, get them interested if they're interested to come in. But I think it has something to do with the financial fair play, because we have lost on so many players, Fred, Jorginho, just to name a few, and we also lost recently, as you can see, on De Gong, who's gone obviously to Barcelona. Does it have to do with them just not wanting to come to us? But I think also, does it have to do with the financial fair play? Maybe they're afraid to go in a bidding war. Maybe they'll be done by the UEFA. What do you think yourself?
Well, there's loads of different things about it. I mean, yeah, you mentioned sometimes the players just want to go somewhere else. And when it came to Jorginho and they said, oh, you have to go to Chelsea, he was fine with that because he's known Sarri for ages, so he went. But the different reason with that one was Napoli in the end refused to sell. And maybe City could have spent 56 million on him a few months beforehand and, you know, got the agreement before it came to that. But to go into the next part of it, it's not really because of financial fair play in the sense of some of the stories we've seen recently about them pulling out of De Jong, because there was a few knocking about, and even his agent was on Sky Sports recently saying, you know, City had everything in place and then they pulled out because of financial fair play. I don't actually think that's true from what I've heard. And also the club were very keen to kind of distance themselves from that behind the scenes. And, you know, I'd heard from a lot of other independent sources that City were in for De Jong right until the end. So I don't think there's any major FFP concern going on with City in their transfers. But just briefly, obviously, if they don't want to spend a lot of money on players, it's partly because of FFP and, you know, just generally running a good business. They don't want to be seen as a club who will just go and spend 100 million on a player. So they'll identify players who are 50, 60 million cheaper, ideally, but not always, usually about 50, 60 million in the last couple of summers, and they'll just go for them. So, yeah, it's broadly FFP, but I don't think there's any specific concerns.
I don't think it is FFP, no. I think it's more that we feel like we won't be taken for a ride by players.
Exactly. Yeah.
So if we evaluate a player at 50 million and then them and their agent come back to us, or the club that we're buying them from wanting 70 and wanting £200,000 a week, just because we've got the money, we're not going to go, yeah, I think we're quite astute and we want to stick to our guns and say, no, this was what we were prepared to. Go to United, Sanchez or Fred or Jorginho or whoever else we're talking about. Go there because this is what we were willing to pay and that's it.
Yeah, exactly. And with that, straight on to another phone call. We've got Matt on. And I think, if I'm right in saying, you want to speak about the atmosphere at the Etihad?
Are you all right there, guys?
Hello, mate.
How are you doing?
Hiya, so I just wanted to make the point, really, about how, although we've had a few big games recently, most to note, Liverpool, Arsenal, but even we're in a title challenge at the moment, we are still chasing. I just want to know what you guys think about the atmosphere recently. This is nothing to do with empty seats. That's a totally different conversation. That's got nothing to do with me. I'm there week in, week out with my dad and all our mates. But we want to know what you guys think about the atmosphere.
Well, it's not just, I feel it's not just a City problem. You look across the board and there's every single team in the Premier League pretty much is trying to create and generate an atmosphere. I think it's more of a society problem. I mean, a lot of times we can get up for the games, like the Liverpool game, the whole place was bouncing. So it can be done. And that opens the doors on so many other questions about ticketing, ticketing prices, policies. So there is a lot of things that can be done, and every club's trying to do it. It's not just a City issue. Mm.
I think the Liverpool atmosphere was one of the best atmospheres we've ever had at the Etihad. But then obviously that does make you question why we can't do that more often. What do you think, Matt? What do you and your friends around you think?
Yeah, I'm definitely with you there. I think that is literally what I was thinking. With the Liverpool atmosphere was brilliant, but why don't we do this more often? Arsenal, for me, is a massive game. All right, they haven't been the Arsenal they've been in the past, but that's still a massive game. It's still a top six team, and everyone needs to be behind the team. We're still chasing Liverpool. We're not, all right, we're 3 points behind them, but at the end of the day, if they win all their games, we're still 3 points behind them. If we lose one game, then we could drop again. So we need to keep building this atmosphere. And although like the 1894 group are doing a really good job behind in the South Stand, and don't get me wrong, I'm not knocking anything done. I think they've done a great job so far. I just think it has, if the South Stand isn't at its full like capacity and everyone isn't singing, and I do think it has a knock-on effect on the rest of the ground, because I'm towards the South Stand corner, so opposite the dugout, and if that corner won't sing unless the South Stand sink, and then it has a knock-on effect on the rest of the ground, which leads on to the family stand, which is where you want to try and create some more noise and get loads of kids interested in it. And I just wanted to know whether you think safe standing would be an option that needs to be really considered to help the atmosphere.
I sit in the South Stand. I'm South Stand level 2 behind the goal. I totally know what you're saying in terms of the South Stand needs to get everybody else going. I do think safe standing would help the atmosphere. I really do. But I don't think that there's... And I hope I'm not too biased, because obviously I work for the club, but I don't think there's too much more the club can actually do on the atmosphere. I see Walter oohing at me. But, I mean, I think the ticket pricing's been really fair this season. For the cup games have been £5 for a child, £15 for an adult. Obviously, I work at City Square, which is all about building the atmosphere. So I don't know how much more the club can do. Obviously, safe standing is a wider football issue, but I do hope it comes in one day. Right, Walter, you was oohing at me.
No, we were talking beforehand, and I think I think most clubs have got a brilliant opportunity. You know, you get the young'uns in, and you provide cheaper meals and you provide cheaper pints all around the ground. So you get the dads in a lot earlier. And you know what it's like. If you've had 3 or 4 down your neck, you know, you're going to be a bit more boisterous. So, I mean, that's how I think the club can... Because it did it a couple of games last season where if you got in an hour and a half early, you were able to buy a couple more pints. And I found that the atmosphere was better just because the dads were a bit more oiled up.
Thanks very much for that, Matt. Really appreciate
thanks,
it, mate.
Matt.
It's not something with an easy answer, obviously, but safe standing might improve things in the years to come. Shall we have a look at some questions from Twitter? We might even have to knock this Sunji High quiz over into the podcast at the end.
Yeah, and Sam's been swatting for this Sunji High quiz that Joe in the studio has written.
It would have been absolutely embarrassing otherwise.
So we'll test it on the podcast. But absolutely loads of questions have come through onto our Twitter account. I want to say a big thank you to everybody. We've had texts in. It's so busy tonight. So let's try and whack through as many of these as we can. So we've got Brisbane Blue says, questionable refereeing towards Liverpool. Why do you think it's happening? Is anyone complicit? And is there a media agenda? Right, what do we think?
Well, Richard Scudamore said he didn't want City to run away with the league again. So that opens up that barrel or can of worms, should I say.
It would be a barrel of worms, in fairness. The thing is, the two last night were shocking. The two offsides, the one they scored from, and the one in the last minute, which, I mean, that would have been a sickener if Origi had scored that. Terrible, and I'm not really sure how you can excuse that or find excuses for it. But, I mean, the Leicester game last week, they could have had a penalty, Liverpool, in fairness. I just think it's one of those things. Like last season, about this time last season, City were having a load of bad tackles go against them and they weren't red cards. I don't think there was a conspiracy against City to not give the opposition teams red cards, but it just all seemed to happen at once. And I wonder if that's happening at the moment. But there is no question that the refereeing is terrible. Well, and the Scudamore thing, it does make you wonder, I suppose. But
well, it's good for the Premier League, isn't it? If you've got the bigger teams, the ones with the most fans... And, you know, City may get there one day, but at the moment, you know, they bring in the money from the worldwide round broadcast deals. They bring in the money with the newspaper, you know, because they're buying them and stuff. So it's a healthier Premier League, and it can sell itself better if, you know, United and Liverpool are top.
I think that links into the media agenda in terms of, yes, I think there is one, because the media want to build more of a competition in the Premier League, because then it builds up bigger games and more people watch and more people read. And also just because of the amount of ex-Liverpool players that there appears to be on panels and in the media. OK, Lost Above on Twitter says, could you talk about the system against Arsenal and give your opinion on whether we should just go simple 4-3-3? So we talked about the system. Should we just go simple 4-3-3, which every team seems to have a plan against?
Oh, so he's kind of advocating not some, mixing it up more if every team's got a plan against it. The Arsenal were probably a really good example. It wasn't even just, 10 men behind the ball and one striker. They had two strikers and they were both playing as midfielders.
Yeah.
So Guardiola came up with something different to get around that. Look, it didn't all work perfectly in the first half, fair enough, but it was something completely new. Ultimately, it did work. And I think it's obvious, it's a no-brainer, really. If you've got more options and the 4-3-3 doesn't have to be relied on so much, then it's good. But let's not forget that 4-3-3, that was the foundation for last season, which was incredible, and most of the good stuff this season as well. So
if you can mix it up in the middle of a game, if Guardiola can say 30 minutes, he just holds his hand in the air and we completely switch formation. but that's it, he was doing that at Bayern, and the players were tuned into that and it was drilled into them. So if you can mix and match it, you give the opposition manager a lot more to think about, and hopefully, you get them more goals. If they're more confused, they are.
Yeah.
Yeah, trusting Pep, that's what I see.
Oh, always.
Jack Pierce 97 on Twitter wants to know why Foden isn't getting the seemingly compulsory, as he calls it, 30 minutes, especially when we're 3-0 up against Huddersfield away or playing Burnley in the Cup.
Yeah, I think generally Guardiola just wants to win games, and he's doesn't take any risk whatsoever. So I can't remember which game it was, but it was probably about 6 weeks ago, and the game was just about in the bag, and everyone was thinking, why didn't he bring Foden on? But I think he was thinking, if they do score now, we've just taken Fernandinho off, it's then 3-2, I think it might have been, and then if Foden's on, he's completely unprepared for it, there's no Fernandinho there, and I think he's just thinking, if this all goes wrong, then we're going to drop points, I'm going to be under pressure, we're not going to win the title. So basically, in a lot of situations, he's just going to go with players who are more rounded, more experienced, more senior. And people might disagree, and people should think Foden should play, and he probably should play in a couple more, like you say, Huddersfield. He could have played, but generally, I think it's because Guardiola is thinking, I need to play my best players here, so I'm not getting sacked.
Right, last really quick one. What's the current fitness situation with Mendy, and how worried should we be about him?
I don't think we should be worried about him. We're talking about a guy who's one of the best left-backs in the world. He's got pace to burn. I mean, we saw what he was like, when he played for Monaco and he just ripped us apart. He takes a while to get going, but he's one of the top assisters in the league and he's hardly played. That's the kind of quality, and he offers us a completely different dimension. If he was playing against Arsenal, I think we've got more goals.
Sorry we couldn't get more through more of your texts there, but do keep them coming in and we'll try and get to them next week as well. Stick around. If you are not listening on the podcast, download the podcast. If you are on the podcast, stick around. We're about to do a Sun Ji Hai quiz in honour of the Chinese New Year. Big thank you very much for listening. Subscribe to the podcast, give us a rating and have a wonderful week.
Manchester City Football Social.
You might be wondering what's going on with that music.
Hello.
Oh, hello, Mystery Man.
There goes my bong. How are you? What wonderful show, by the way.
Cheers, Joe.
Wonderful show. I'm trying to give you a compliment here.
That was just the warm-up to this, mate.
Yeah, trust me. Strap yourselves in. Today is, obviously, Chinese New Year. It's the year of the pig. No comments, please. I have got a Sun Ji Hai quiz for you here to enjoy. Are you all ready?
No.
Oh, sorry. That was a bit simple. Sam, are you ready? Confident?
Let's see.
Confident, Sam's been researching.
Maybe. Of course he has. We gave the game away pretty early on. Right. What year did Sun Ji Hai... Oh, no, by the way, I need... this is a quick fire quiz. So, you're all going to have your own little buzzer word. Walter, yours is going to be Sun. Sam, you're going to be G. And Nat, you're going to be Hai.
Brilliant.
On life.
On
right.
Life.
What year did Manchester City sign Sun Ji Hai?
Hi.
Oh.
Oh, you said the whole thing there. What were you going for?
2004.
2004. Can anyone else throw a number at me?
2002.
2001.
Sam, you are correct. 2002. Now, how much did Manchester City pay for Sunchi Height?
I'm absolutely no idea. I'm going to say £300,000.
£300,000. Can I get another guess?
2 million.
1.1 million.
Sam, bang on. 2 million.
As if he hasn't got the Wikipedia page up now or something.
I've got it up now.
Right, this will be in your memory, so I'm expecting everyone to shout this out as loud as you can. Can you remember against which club Sunchi Height scored his first goal for Manchester City? Who said that?
Sam. But Sam. I thought you were going to say debut, and I didn't research this bit.
I didn't research any of it.
I'm going to guess Charlton.
Anyone else?
Nah. Hi. Everton.
Hi, how you doing?
Son, Leeds.
Leeds. Oh, should we say which one's the closest? No, I'm not giving any of you it. It was Birmingham. So you're wrong. Right, Sunchi Height is now 41 years old. He was born in 1977. Can you name what year the animal was when Sunchi Height was born?
Son,
yeah,
snake,
you are correct.
No. Yay! Yes, Walter.
What does Sunchi Height have in common with Gary Neville and Stuart Pearce? Anyone?
He fed the goat.
Pardon?
Hey! Oh,
unfortunately not. Yeah,
he's missed a penalty at Main Road.
Oh no. Sam, your go.
Is it my go? I didn't volunteer for a go.
Yeah, you have one.
Is he in the Manchester Hall of Fame?
Oh. Yes, it is, isn't it?
Do you know what? The word in here is he's in the English Football Hall
wrong
of Fame.
Then. Yeah.
Is it not, are we not having it?
No.
I still won anyway.
That is the final question. Well done to Sam. The first and maybe the last Sunchi Height.
His debut against Coventry City. I'm just getting through all these.
This is what he's memorising before.
Yeah. I'm going to go now back into my cage. You can say goodbye if you like. Bye, everyone. Bye. Bye.
Happy New Year.
Yeah, bye. I'm going to go off in a mood.
You follow them from the stands. You follow them on the telly. You follow them in the pub. Now, you can follow City here.
Play my flash briefing.
All the latest Manchester City news is now available as a daily update via your Amazon smart speaker. Just search Manchester Football Social in store now to get the latest news from the Etihad whenever you want it without lifting a finger.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their Golden Glow body set includes 3 clinically proven bestsellers for smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set provides spa-level results at home. Both sets come in giftable boxes with savings up to $48 and free shipping for a limited time. For 10% off your first order site-wide, go to oseamalibu.com and use code MOM.